to the Portland Christian Center podcast. This week, Associate Pastor Joel Slater continues our series on Abraham. This week, Pastor Joel will encourage us to believe God as Abraham's spiritual children. Now here's Pastor Joel.
Today, and it's so such a privilege to always be able to borrow Pastor Ray's pulpit. It's never easy to fill his shoes. I mean, he's got some big shoes to fill, and it's never easy, but I appreciate his generosity in sharing the pulpit, but I also appreciate his grace and mercy for not being here, because it's really hard when he's sitting on the front row, and especially on a day like today, he would be sitting there with jet-lagged eyes, and you just never know what he's thinking. You know, it's just like, am I saying something wrong? Am I going to lose my license? I don't know. I mean, it's just sometimes it's just a little unnerving, but then, you know, someone reminded me that he might still be watching on our live streaming camera, so I can't get away. But that's okay. It's you never know what he's thinking until he tells you, but it's always good, and I always appreciate it. And honestly, I don't know how he does it. I really, really don't, because he was ready to come and preach. I mean, he's ready to get off that airplane late at night after 20, 30 hours of travel on an airplane and come up and just preach like there's no tomorrow. And I just don't know how the guy does it. I even try to beat him to church. I even try to get here before me, and I can never get here earlier than he. I mean, I don't think he sleeps, but I just don't know how he does it. And I'm so privileged to have a pastor and a pastoral staff and pastoral associates alongside me that get to model the kind of ministry that I aspire to. In fact, I appreciate it so much that I bring my son, Jackson. He's 7 years old. I don't know what it is. I always talk about my kids, I get choked up. I'm sorry. But maybe it's because he made his first basket in basketball yesterday. I'm really, really I'm not sure who's more excited, me or him, about that basket. But I bring my son Jackson in on Sunday mornings. And when I ask him, are you sure you want to get up that early? Are you sure you want to get here early? And he goes, yeah, Dad, I want to learn how to be a pastor. Yeah. Oh, that just gets you right there, don't it? I thought I was recovering. And he says, I want to learn how to be a pastor, Dad. Now, I think it has more to do with donuts. But I'm going to give him the benefit of the opportunity, especially when out of the blue, my wife and I were saying this, that sometimes he just comes up with some amazing comments and questions. And he said this not too long ago, he said, Dad, how do you be a pastor? How do you be a pastor? And, you can tell him to go to school, which is going to turn him off. You can tell him that you work hard, and of course that's going to turn him off. And I just, I just paused, and I thought, I'm so glad that if I don't know how to tell him how to be a pastor, I'm so thankful that I get to put him around people who can show him how to be a pastor, like Pastor Ray and Pastor Ron Cochran. And then there are some amazing retired pastors that we have in our congregation. If you're new, you may not know these names, but for some of us, realizing that we have, Jim Swanson, who built this building, that he is a part of our pastoral team, and I go in and I sneak into his office and I borrow some books and I, steal some sermons and, I'll do whatever, and he, but he's so great to have that as a resource. And Tom Ming, if you need to know how to, love on people, you just get around Tom Ming. Harold Pollack, is just an amazing and creative and nonstop event planner, and I'm trying to get him to teach me how to be a cruise ministry director. He's still holding out on me. He tells me I got about 50 more years before I get to learn that ministry, but I'm holding out for that. And then Hermie Engelgau, a missionary and encourager and just lover of God. And so all these people are so amazing, and I'm just so blessed that I get to be around this pool of wisdom and talent and learn and have my son learn how to do these things. Now, the truth is, not everyone here wants to be a pastor. Some of you, that's the last thing you want to be. But I want to remind you today that how awesome it is to be part of this church and to have some of the people that I've mentioned, but then others in this church as that pool of wisdom and life experience that you can draw from. That you are not meant to find the answers on your own. And that's one of the reasons why God has given to the church, because you have a body of believers. And if you don't have a body of believers, a family that you can lean on and look to, we want to encourage you to look here and see if you can find some people here that you can connect with. Because that's what we're about. That's what we want to be about, far more than just information and worship, although those are two critical components, but also to be that group of people that you can go to. And so my question I want to lead off with today, as we're talking about the subject of faith, is, how do you find out what you need to know? Where do you go to find out what you need to know? Where do you go when you find out what you need to know? Now, depending on our age group, you know, we have different resources. You know, I had somebody call me just the other day saying that I found you in the phone book. I didn't know we still had those. But we apparently, but that's good that, you know, some people still use the phone book. Do you go to Google? Do you Google? Whatever you need to know, you Google it. You Google it. But even more deeply and more personally, rather than just where do you go when you need to know, but my question is, who do you go to when you need to know? Think about this. When you need to make a phone call, when you need to have an answer, do you prefer to talk to the automated system, press 1, press 2, press 3, or do you prefer to talk to a real person? A real person, right? You'd prefer to, especially when your situation is dire, when it's tough. You don't want an automated answer. You don't want a canned answer. You want someone. You want a real person. Who do you go to when you need to know what you need to know? So let's dig deep a little deeper to that today. So do you go to a person that says they've read the latest book? Do you go to a person, I just read a book, or I know a guy? Do you go to someone who has the loudest opinion? Some of us, we go on Facebook. Hey, what's a great resource for this or that? And you can get 5, 10, 15 responses on Facebook, and there's always one person that just, no, everyone's wrong, I'm right. Is that the person you go to, the one with the loudest opinion? Or would you go to someone who has the life experience and the track record that embodies the life that you want? Is that the kind of person you want to go to? The person that has the track record and the life experience that embodies what you most want to see happen in your life? Now, I don't know about you, but I want to learn from someone who's doing it right. All right? So if I want to have a great marriage, I'm going to go talk to the couple that's been married for over 50 years and they're still holding hands. If I want to know how to raise my children and have great children, I'm going to go talk to the couple whose kids' names are on the honor list and not on the wanted list. Think about that. If I want to know about how to handle my finances, I'm going to go talk to the CEO who lives in a big house and not is serving time in the big house. Okay? So where do you go and who do you go to when you need to know? Now, again, if you're just joining us for the first time, we're talking about faith, and we're looking at the person of Abraham. Abraham was a man who lived way back in the beginning of the Old Testament, and we're talking about faith and this journey from risky belief to radical blessing. And I want to tell you this, that when it comes to faith, I want to go to who knows what I need to know, and when it comes to faith, I'm going to go to the granddaddy of them all. I'm going to go to Abraham. I'm going to go to Abraham. I'm going to go to the guy who shows me how to do it right. Now, faith is crucial. Faith is crucial to a relationship with God. But you know what? Faith is crucial in relationships, period. You can't have healthy relationships without faith. You know, you have to have faith in that person to have a healthy relationship. If they don't call, you got faith in them, you don't worry. Because I have faith in them. I trust them. But if you don't have faith, you can't have healthy relationships. So faith is crucial. But I also know that there might be people in this room that maybe for you, faith is a stumbling block. Maybe you tried that and it didn't work. Maybe you put your faith in someone and they disappointed you. Maybe you're tempted to believe that this idea of risky faith, risky belief moving to radical blessing is nothing more than the appeal for those who are adrenaline junkies and type A personalities. Maybe you're saying, that's just not me. I don't like risk. I don't like to dare. That's not me. This idea of faith, risky belief, a radical blessing, that's simply for the type A personalities. I'm here to tell you today, first, I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad you're here, that you're willing. I mean, I'm here to say that maybe faith is not what maybe you think. Now, I don't know about you. And I don't know about you, but you know what? Faith has not always solved all my problems. Faith has not always given me an easy way in life. And maybe that's why, for some of you, faith, you don't trust in faith, or you don't want to apply faith or live by faith, because faith has brought you problems. And I'm sorry for that. And I don't have time to get into everything about that situation, but I want to acknowledge that a lot of us wrestle with that, this idea of faith and not wanting to risk. But I want to ask you a few more questions today. And one of those is, what if that was never the plan? What if having faith was never meant to help you avoid difficulty and trouble in your life? But what if faith was meant to carry you through difficulty and trouble in your life? You know, we have a lot of people in our church that are facing some huge problems. Health issues, relational issues, got, you know, we got word last week of someone who was given a very severe diagnosis regarding their eyes, and they thought that, you know what, you may never get your eyesight back. And that's very, very troubling. But the idea is that instead of worrying, what if faith was not meant to keep those things away, but to carry you through those times? Because I'm here to say that that person that I just described with the eye situation said, you know what, I'm just going to trust God. I'm going to believe that he has things in control. It didn't avoid things, but you know what? The amazing thing is that after we prayed, we got a great report, and things are better now. But you know what? We have people that are still suffering situations and struggles and everything, and things have not necessarily changed that drastically. But you know what? Compare someone who has faith to someone who doesn't have faith in such a situation. It's a world of difference. Faith makes all the difference. And last week, Pastor Caleb did a masterful job of showing through the Apostle Paul's example of Abraham that believing faith, what is believing faith? It's relentlessly trusting what God has said rather than what you and I can see. Relentlessly. That word means that it's not going to be easy. But you doggedly determine that you're going to trust what God has said rather than what you or I can see with our own eyes. Now, that's easy. I understand. That is easy. That's an easy statement to put on a sheet of paper or put on your dashboard before you go into that big meeting, before you face that difficult situation, or in the best of terms. They're like, yeah, faith is relentlessly trusting what God says more than I can see. But what if life's not smooth and easy? What if the situation is a little bit dire? What if you put this to the test? What if you prayed and nothing's happened? What if you gave and you've been left empty-handed? What if you stayed in that relationship and nothing's improved? What if you played by the rules and you got cheated? What if you lived a healthy lifestyle and still got sick? And any and all these things accumulated with you crying out, whether verbally or inside your spirit, God, is this really have anything to do with living a life of faith? I thought I was supposed to get out of this through faith, and I'm right in the middle of it. But I'm here to say that we can leverage some people around us, just like I want my son to leverage the people around him if he wants to be a pastor, and all of us want to leverage the advice and the experience of those whose lives we want to emulate. If we were to look back a few generations, we could leverage a spiritual father, a family member, Abraham, for advice. And I think he'd say this, and if you leave here today without it remembering anything else, this is what I want you to remember. And this is it, is that Abraham would say to us, if we were to sit down, have coffee, and say, Abraham, just pour into my life, he would say this, you know what? The focus of our faith is far more important than the outcome of any of our efforts. The focus of our faith is far more important than the outcome of any of our efforts. Yes, it may not have worked, but you know what? Keep your focus on Jesus. You know what? Something may have not come down the pike quite yet, but you just keep your focus on Jesus. See, it's true that God is in the business of growing up our faith. God loves us the way we are, but he said, you know what? I don't want you to remain as you are. I love you too much to leave you as you are. I want you to grow up. My 7-year-old son is tall for his age, but if he remains at that height when he's 17, I'm going to start worrying. And any of us, you know, who are struggling with our faith, I want you to see things from a different point of view and say, you know what? It's not that God has failed you. God is trying to fan into flame your faith. Because our faith seldom grows when times are smooth and easy. It's honest. I mean, when times are smooth and easy, we're tempted to take credit for things, aren't we? I made this happen. I did that. I got there. And we live more by our own efforts than by faith. But you see, as we're going to look here in a few moments in a couple of passages from the book of Galatians, we're getting our text mainly from Hebrews and the book of Galatians. And these two audiences, they are struggling with their faith because, if you look into the historical record, they had come to faith and they had some smooth and easy times. The Roman Empire had lightened up on persecution. And for a time, Christianity was in vogue and it was cool. And they had the favor of all the people. And so they kind of let their guard down. They started getting a little bit faith flabby, if you will. And then suddenly things got difficult again. And they're struggling. And they're saying, you know what? This doesn't work. This is not what's supposed to happen. Life was supposed to stay smooth and easy. And now it's got hard. And their faith had weakened. And then when these times came, they began to cry out, where is God? Why doesn't he do something about this? If he could, he should. If he could, he would. And since he won't, I will. See, when God doesn't show up, our faith is flabby and our faith is weak, and we refuse to keep our focus on him rather than the outcome of our efforts, we start to panic. And I wonder if you've ever felt like that. I know I felt like that. And I have to believe that Abraham felt like that. But I want us to leverage Abraham's whole story and understand this. And you know what? Again, this has nothing to do with a type A personality. This has nothing for those who are who naturally inclined to just pull up their boots and get with the program and get on board. This can apply to every single one of us, regardless of your temperament, your personality, or your skill set. Because when we look in Galatians, we're going to see that Abraham, we're going to see Paul leveraging this person, Abraham, going back into the pool of experience and leveraging Abraham's example. And he says this in Galatians 3:6. He says, consider Abraham. Consider Abraham. Leverage the pool of people that you know. Consider Abraham. He believed God, not in himself. And what happened? It was credited to righteousness. In other words, Paul is saying to all of us, the focus of our faith is far more important than the outcome of our efforts. Now, I can anticipate that there may be some in here saying, it's not that easy, Pastor Joel. You see things through a very idealistic lens. You don't know my situation. But can I tell you that Paul recognizes that faith is not easy? Paul, you know, faith got Paul into a lot of problems. Faith caused more problems for Paul than it solved for Paul. But you know what Paul says? Faith isn't easy, but it is simple. And simple and easy are not always synonymous. They're not always the same thing. However, Paul knew that staying focused on Jesus makes simple faith not easy, but easier than depending on our own efforts. So here's some things I want you to watch out for. Before you start thinking that, well, it's not that easy, here's a couple things that erode faith. First of all, I know that one thing that erodes faith is that unexplainable circumstances where God doesn't seem to do what he's supposed to do. A lot of people walk away from faith because, God, you didn't show up. You could and you should, but you didn't. And so that erodes faith. But I think one thing that's far more destructive is that there are lifestyle decisions that each of us make in life that eventually impact what we believe. We make decisions in our life and that impacts what we believe. And the thing that these two scenarios have in common is circumstantial faith. Circumstantial faith. What is circumstantial faith? Well, it's this idea that I'm trusting God based on my ability to find God in my circumstances. You've always believed it because it worked for you. As long as it worked for you, believed it. But then something happened in your life and you made a decision, oh, that's not working for me. That's not helping me. I'm going to go find something else. And maybe it wasn't too bad. Maybe it wasn't too off the mark. But you began to look at other philosophies. You began to read, you know, just find the latest book. You began to find books that said what you wanted to hear and eventually led you down a path. And it's this sense, and ingrained in this sense, and it reinforces the sense that our faith in God hinges on our experiences. That our whole faith in God is based on our experience. And if we have a bad experience, then God must not be doing what God should be doing. And that might work short term. Honestly, that might work for a little while. You may find something that works for you short term. But the problem is, experience-based faith is always very, very fragile. It's always experience-based faith is fragile because life is random. Life is very, very random. Life is not consistent. There's a randomness to life that makes our efforts unreliable. It worked today, but it doesn't work tomorrow. That means, if it didn't work tomorrow, then I got to go find another philosophy. I got to find another faith because I got to find what's working today. But what works today may not work for you tomorrow. And that makes our efforts unreliable, apart from ensuring that the outcome of God wants guarantees faith in him. Because as I said before, the focus of our faith in Jesus is far more important, far more reliable, far more strong than the outcome of our efforts. So if you have your Bibles with me, again, we're going to look in the book of Galatians, and we're going to look in chapter 1 just for a moment and look at the problem. And then we're going to move on to chapter 3, and we're going to look at what we can learn from our spiritual father, Abraham. Paul is confronting a group of people. He's taking a group of people that initially received the gospel based on faith in Christ alone. However, there's a group of people that came in and convince them that faith alone is too simple and is not sufficient. Oh, that's good for Sunday school. Oh, that's good for five-year-olds and everything, but you're a grown-up. You need something more sophisticated. And so, and Paul says this, he's very concerned about this because he says that that type of gospel is no gospel at all. So look with me in Galatians chapter 1, verses 6 and 7. And here's the problem. In fact, it's such a problem that Paul uses very strong language. This is not a small problem. This is a very fundamental problem. And Paul says this, chapter 1, verses 6 and 7. I am astonished that you are so quickly deserting the one who called you by the grace of Christ and are turning to a different gospel. Different gospel? No, it's just the better gospel. It's just the more sophisticated gospel. No, he's saying a different gospel, which is really no gospel at all. It's not a better substitute. It's no gospel at all. Evidently, some people are throwing you into confusion and are trying to pervert the gospel of Christ. See, these people wanted something that was manageable. These people wanted something that was measurable. These people wanted something that was ultimately explainable. And can I ask you today, is that the kind of God you want? Is that the kind of God you want? You want a God that's completely measurable? Because a God that's measurable has limitations. A God that is manageable is not a God at all. He's your pet. And a God that's completely explainable can be out of options. And yet, that's the kind of God they kind of wanted because it put them in control. So Paul launches into a series of rhetorical questions. These are not questions to be answered. These all have an answer. In fact, they all have the same answer. And the same answer, and I'm going to give you ahead of time, is what I've been giving to you the entire time. The focus of our faith is far more important than the outcome of our efforts. So see if you can take that answer and insert it to all these questions. Because we can forget. We can be just like these Galatians. Because these Galatians were educated people. They were sophisticated people, just like us. And yet they easily forget. And he says this going on in Galatians chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. He says, "You foolish Galatians." You're foolish. That's a hard word. Who has bewitched you? I wonder what this word meant. And you think someone's put a spell on you. You are acting weird. You are acting, you are completely sincere, but you're sincerely wrong. You, who has bewitched you? Before your very eyes, Jesus Christ was clearly portrayed as crucified. And I would like to learn just one thing from you. Just one thing. Did you receive the Spirit by observing the law or by believing what you heard? See, Paul is saying that it's possible. It is possible for someone to start off under good teaching, love Jesus, trust him with all their heart, but then over time, get into all some weird nonsense where they begin to add in addition to Jesus in the Bible. It's not enough. There's got to be more. And so this is what happens. They'll start making up their own rules. They'll start defining their own morality. They'll start their own traditions. They'll have their own culture. They'll make their own demands. And they'll have their own understanding. And we see this in our culture today. Well, that may be true for you, but it's not true for me. Which absolutely destroys the definition of truth in itself. And when that happens, when you start to move from the basic gospel, the truth of the gospel, the fundamental gospel, the pleasures and temptations of life will cause every element of your belief system to become inconvenient. If something is not true, then it will lead to progressive compromise. And you will find out that the things you claim to be true, even if they benefited you, you were great with it. But suddenly, something fundamental, something that causes you to put your full faith in Christ is inconvenient, and you will negotiate with it. That's circumstantial faith, folks. And if your faith is circumstantial, you will opt for pleasure over faith every single time. You will like it. Rather than being withheld from you, rather than putting off till later what you want right now, rather than trusting God's going to provide, rather than jumping in recklessness, you will opt for pleasure, relief from pain, relief from stress, relief from all these things. Temporarily, you'll opt for that over faith every single time. You'll adjust your belief system to match your lifestyle rather than adjust your lifestyle to match your belief system. C.S. Lewis said, "Faith is the art of holding on to things your reason had once accepted in spite of your changing moods." Faith is holding on to something you reason. This makes sense. in spite of your changing moods. So I want to, speaking of moods, I want to pull back the false face of faith today by using, again, Paul's use of Galatians chapter 3. He's asked this, he keeps going for the jugular here. I mean, he's wound up, folks. He takes this seriously. He goes, are you so foolish? After beginning with the Spirit, are you now trying to attain your goal by human effort? The false face of faith is this. Understand that faith is not a power or force. Faith is not something that you just tap into or I tap into to form some kind of supernatural lasso where we can rope God and then pull him into submission to us. That's not what faith is. Faith is not a formula. It's not some code you crack. Faith is not self-confidence. Faith is not saying, I'm believing I'm going to get the deal. I'm just believing that she's going to say yes. I'm just believing it's going to work out. That's not biblical faith. Faith comes down to trusting that God knows what he's doing, even if you and I don't. And we go on, just as the verse next shows us. Galatians 3:4, have you suffered so much for nothing? If it really was for nothing, we think it's for nothing. But he's asking the question, is it really for nothing? He's throwing the light again on that idea of circumstantial faith, that idea of trusting in God based on my experiences or my ability to find him in my circumstances. If we do that, if we trust in our own ability, we will mistake God's silence for God's absence. But he cannot violate his word. He said, I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. Do not mistake God's silence for God's absence. So what's the solution? I've got some remedies for that. I've got some remedies. If you're suffering, if you're diagnosing yourself with fragile faith, yeah, I have a tendency to try to find God based on my ability to see him in my circumstances. In order to avoid settling for circumstantial faith, let me just suggest we admit some things. They say admitting it is the first step. Number one, maybe we admit that we're limited in our ability to interpret our circumstances. Maybe we're limited in our ability to interpret our circumstances. Maybe we don't always see our circumstances as they truly are. Everyone has had experiences that in the moment seem bad, but looking back later down in life, can you say that they turned out good? If I were to pull your kids and say, your dad take you to the dentist? In that moment, say, oh, he hates me. He took me to the dentist. But we all know that what would happen if you didn't take him to the dentist? You'd be paying out of pocket for fake teeth for the rest of your life. What seemed bad in the moment can have a positive effect later on down the road. We're bad at interpreting our circumstances. Hebrews 11, verses 17 through 19 sheds light on this. Because, again, Abraham struggled with the same thing. But looking back, we have a different perspective. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He had received the promise, was about to sacrifice his one and only son. Can you imagine? This is not an experience that any of us want to experience. Even though God had said to him, it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead, and figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead. We're limited in our ability to interpret our circumstances. But can we also admit that maybe our time frame isn't long enough? When we evaluate God's faithfulness, his presence, his intervention, in a time frame that suits us but doesn't suit him, we think God has failed us, don't we? Abraham's promise, though, took 25 years. Joseph, between the time that he had a dream that he would be a leader and the time it came, 18 years. The people of Israel were given a promise that they would be given a land. 470 years to come true. Jesus didn't even start his ministry until he was 30 years old. Our time frame is not long enough, folks. Furthermore, we don't often interpret the voice of God very well. We have all had examples where people heard from God, but then God didn't do what they think God said he would do. But you know what? Abraham had that same situation. In Genesis 15:1, God said to Abraham, do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield. Get this, your very great reward. God said, I am your shield, your very great reward. And right in the next verse, Abraham said, O sovereign God, O sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless? We don't hear the voice of God very well. Did you not hear what he just said? I am your reward. Oh, sovereign Lord. Right out of his own lips, he acknowledged that sovereign means all powerful. What can you do? And we do that too. I want to give you a caution that if your faith is leaning on your ability, if your faith is leaning on your ability to always hear from God, to always get it right, to always get your expected outcome, that's fragile faith. That is circumstantial faith. And then if nothing else works, then maybe we'll look for a formula. We like the formulas. We like the recipe. Just tell me what to do. But Galatians 3:5 says, did God give you his spirit and work miracles among you because you observe the law or because you believe what you have heard? Two prayers and a church service. Three prayers, two church services. Two prayers, a church service, a Bible study. And if it doesn't work out, we think, what is wrong with God? What is wrong with God? Or we might fall into the trap of asking, well, what's wrong with me? But I want you to notice that Paul says there's two things God is doing and only thing, one thing that we need to do. He says in that verse 5, he says, he has given you his spirit. He is working miracles among you through us putting our faith in him. He's given us his spirit. He's doing the miracles. All he's asking is this very simple thing. It's not easy. It's simple. Put our faith in him. And so Paul has come down. He's lowered the boom. He's slapped us upside the head. But he's brought us to our senses, I hope. And then he doesn't leave us that way. He doesn't leave us bruised and broken. But he comforts us now in Galatians 3, verses 7 and 8. He says, understand then. Just understand. Come to your right thinking. And understand then that those who believe are children of Abraham. The scripture foresaw that God would justify the Gentiles by faith and announce the gospel in advance to Abraham. All nations will be blessed through you. For many of us, it's true that God will often use an event or circumstances. I know. I'm here in this pulpit because of an experience I believe I had right here at this very altar over 20 years ago. But that experience cannot be the foundation of my faith. Because as many times as I've felt the presence of God, believe me, folks, I have not felt the presence of God. And I've not felt capable. I've not felt equipped. And I've not felt like I have what it takes. But that's when God comes and says, it's not the outcome of your efforts. It's your focus. It's your faith. The foundation, the focus, the object of relentless faith is not an experience. It's not my ability to make sense of the world. It's not even an answered prayer. But it is my focus on Jesus Christ. So what's the family resemblance? Do you look like Abraham? Do you look like one of Abraham's children today? For better or worse, people can instantly tell my kids belong to me. Unfortunately, I wish they took after their mother in every way possible. But unfortunately, you can tell my kids belong to me. One has my temper, one has my sense of humor, and one just looks like me but wearing Crocs all the time. You can just tell which one that is. And if you want to be known as one of Abraham's children, if you want to leverage that descendant, you want to leverage that advice from someone in your spiritual family tree, this is what you do. Just a few things. One, great faith looks like great surrender. Great faith looks like great surrender. Martin Luther, the one who started the Protestant Reformation, lived a life of torment because he was trying with all his effort to please God, trying with all his effort to obey God, trying with all his effort to earn the right to be a child of God, until God dropped that truth into his heart and said, it's the just shall live by faith. And when he took his focus off his own efforts and he put his focus completely on Jesus, he turned the world upside down. Surrender is not a position of weakness. Surrender is actually a position of peace. That God's got this. He's got you covered. Great faith also leverages a heritage. Galatians 3:9 says, so those who have faith are blessed right along with Abraham, the man of faith. If I keep my faith on Jesus, I'm going to be just like Abraham. If I keep my faith, if I just do what Grandpa Abraham said, then I'm going to receive the same blessing that Abraham received. I leverage that heritage. And then great faith looks long term. Hebrews 11:13 says, all these people, all the people that put this into practice were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. And they admitted that they were aliens and strangers on earth. They look long term. They didn't get it in this life, but you know what? This life isn't forever. They look long term. C.S. Lewis said, they say of some temporal suffering, no future bliss can make up for it. Not knowing that heaven, once attained, will work backwards and turn even that agony into a glory. So what would happen? What would happen to your faith if you chose to just simply say, maybe just this week, you just try it this week. What would happen to your faith if you said, Jesus, I'm going to focus on you rather than on my efforts. Jesus, I'm going to focus on you rather than trust in the stability of my career. What if we said, Jesus, I'm going to focus on you to help me raise my kids rather than think I have all the answers. Jesus, I'm going to lean on you. I'm going to trust in you. I'm going to focus on you rather than try to make that relationship happen. Jesus, I'm going to lean on you. I'm going to focus on you rather than trying to manage my own sexuality, morality. Jesus, I'm going to lean on you. I'm going to focus on you in managing my finances. I'm going to focus on you that you're going to help me get out of debt. Jesus, I'm going to focus on you because you love that prodigal son or daughter far more than me. I've tried, I've struggled, and I'm about to give up. But the word of the Lord for you today is that you would focus on the object of your faith, the focus of your faith, Jesus Christ, is far more important than the outcome of your efforts. And I will hear to say, he is not done yet. You focus on Jesus, not the outcome of your efforts, and he will provide you with a radical blessing that comes from him rather than it comes from you.
Thank you for listening to the Portland Christian Center podcast. For more information about the ministries of Portland Christian Center, please visit us online at pcctoday.com. Again, thank you for listening.